Blog Talk Radio.
From the Blog Talk Radio studios right here in the heart of Hudson County, folks. It's always in Union City, New Jersey. Insider NJ proudly brings to you Politically Direct, and I am the professor, Fernando Uribe. I want to welcome you here on the 21st of May, the year 2020, the year it's been, folks, to say the very least. And, of course, I want to thank you in for listening from wherever and however you may be doing so throughout Hudson County, throughout the Garden State, and, of course, to all my friends throughout the good old U.S. of A. Now, you can write to the show's inbox at any time, folks, and welcome your emails and feedback about the episodes. Any suggestions for topics or guests coming up, write to me. I love getting emails. Again, I do answer them promptly, politicallydirectnj at yahoo.com. Once again, politicallydirectnj at yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Professor Fernando Uribe, and, of course, follow the show at Politically Direct NJ. Tons of new followers, a lot of likes, and of course, how many of you enjoy my Instagram stories, a little politically incorrect humor, some memes, pro wrestling, pop culture, politics, everything. I know many of you enjoy it on the Instagram. So again, definitely keep tuning in, and I'll definitely keep you entertained here as we're trying to endure this pandemic. And of course, folks, hit me up on Twitter at Professor F. Uribe. And for all you Facebook subscribers, please go to the official page for Politically Direct. Like it, of course, and tell your friends to do the same. Now, don't forget to check out Insider NJ, folks, by going to www.insidernj.com for the best coverage of the political scene anywhere in the state of New Jersey. No one does it better, folks, than Insider NJ. Once you go on the website, upper right-hand corner, you'll see the subscribe button. Click on that, and you're automatically enrolled in the morning intelligence briefing. And again, it starts with our editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro, and our wonderful columnists, Fred Snowflack, Alan Steinberg, and even Jay Lasseter as well, many, many more. So definitely check it out. Don't forget to like Insider NJ on Facebook, folks. Follow it also on Twitter. And never forget to start and end your day with Insider NJ. Now, the opinions and views, and every week on Politically Direct, are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, the management, the journalists, the staff, or our sponsors. Folks, first of all, I just want to sort of start off the program by saying I want to thank everybody in the last probably 96 hours who has reached out to me and my family during this very difficult time. This past Monday morning at 12:40 a.m., we had the unfortunate circumstance of my grandmother, who would have turned 102 next month, to unfortunately has passed. It's been a really rough few days, obviously, Sunday celebrating her birthday, and then very much the next morning, my grandmother passing. Was just an awful, few days. But a lot of you, hundreds of you, as a matter of fact, on my social media have reached out. And again, I want to take this opportunity on behalf of my family to thank you all for taking the time to either text message, phone call, DM on Instagram, maybe Facebook Messenger, whatever it is, email. You've all taken the time to reach out to me and my family. We thank you for your condolences. We thank you for keeping us in your prayers, for keeping us in your thoughts. And of course, you know, we were very blessed to have my grandmother for 101 wonderful years. She was an exceptional woman. She was kind. She was warm. She was just a good-hearted person. And I know this from birth, when she took care of me and well into my childhood. And, you know, just she lived a very full life, and we were very grateful and thankful to have her. And it's just been a rough few days, but, you know, certainly it's been surreal. You know, not sleeping the last few days has become sort of the norm. I have to try to get back to a normal sleep cycle. Not that this pandemic hasn't contributed to that anyway, but this has not helped. But we'll try to get back to some normalcy here. And we thank you again on behalf of the entire Uribe and Gonzalez family for reaching out to us during this very difficult time. So thank you for that. And I promise to get back to every single person who reached out via social media, via text, via direct, you know, messenger, everything else. So, you know, again, thank you so much for keeping us in your thoughts and prayers. Folks, you know, the show must go on, as they say, here on Politically Direct. And it got me thinking about something in the news cycle that caught my attention. And quite frankly, that is the subject of my first shot here tonight on the podcast. And folks, if you kept up with the news cycle, one of the things, and listen, again, we can agree to disagree whether or not you watch Fox News or not, but one thing I think we can all agree on, if we're being intellectually honest, is I think the fact that Tucker Carlson, number one, is the reason why he's number one in this time slot, because he's infinitely superior to anybody else during that time slot. You know, forget about that clown on MSNBC, forget about the clown on CNN or anybody else on during that hour. I mean, Tucker Carlson really, I think, tackles issues in a way that is informative. I think he discusses issues that the mainstream liberal media won't cover. And one issue that really stands out for me is, and he talked about it this week in a monologue, Parenthood affiliates improperly applied for and received $80 million in coronavirus stimulus funds, according to documents released this week. Now, again, an exclusive on his show, he went on to say that 37 Planned Parenthood affiliates applied for and received a total of $80 million in loans from the Paycheck Protection Program, the PPP. Now the federal government wants that money back, saying that the affiliates should have known they weren't eligible for the coronavirus stimulus payouts. Now, the Small Business Administration reaching out to each involved Planned Parenthood affiliate, explaining that affiliates, larger organizations with more than 500 employees, aren't eligible for PPP distributions. Now, the Planned Parenthood Federation of America alone has more than 600 employees. So, for example, a Planned Parenthood affiliate in Metropolitan Washington, for example, received a letter stating that although self-certified that it was eligible for a $1.3 million PPP loan, in accordance with the SBA's affiliation rules, it will need to return the money. Now, PPMW's request for money from the Trump administration came just months after the affiliate's president and CEO, Laura Myers, promised to turn down federal funds. She went to say, quote, Planned Parenthood is never going to allow the Trump-Pence administration to bully us into withholding critical health information from our patients. She said this in August. After the White House banned Planned Parenthood clinics from making abortion referrals if they want to continue receiving federal funds. Apparently, Planned Parenthood about to give up federal funds entirely rather than comply with the order. Now, the SBA warned more severe penalties were possible beyond mandatory repayment. In particular, incorrect or false eligibility certifications by PPP recipients could result in criminal or civil sanctions if the SBA determined borrowers made knowingly false statements in a letter that was written early the week by the SBA. Now, the letter explained that the PPFA affiliates clearly were covered by the PPP affiliate rules. PPFA's bylaws, a version of which is publicly available, revealed that becoming a PPFA affiliate requires a certification by the PPFA board. The document continued, quote, once certified, each affiliate shall be governed by written bylaws which conform to PPFA policies. The largest single government loan was a $7.5 million allotment to the Planned Parenthood of Orange and San Bernardino counties in California. One Planned Parenthood affiliate, as a matter of fact, received the loan but declined it. Now, after this report was published, U.S. Senators Marco Rubio, a Republican out of Florida, and Josh Hawley, a Republican out of Missouri, called for an investigation and said that the money needs to be returned, warning that criminal prosecution may be appropriate. Now, Rick Scott, a Republican out of Florida, and James Lankford, a Republican out of Oklahoma, also demanded that Planned Parenthood return the funds. Now, Rubio, who has served as chairman of the Senate Committee on Small Business and Entrepreneurship, went on to say, and again, I'm just, you know, citing the article because it's a really, really, I think it's a good one to really put out there. But folks, you know, this is something that just drives me crazy about Planned Parenthood. And I'm someone on this program who has taken to the airwaves repeatedly, taking Planned Parenthood to task. And the reason that I do that is because they continue to be dishonest in their sort of in their presentation, and they continue to be dishonest, I think, by just this latest chicanery. And something that I have talked about on this show repeatedly, like, listen, for the record, I'm a pro-choice guy. I'm also within reason, you know, I don't believe in abortions up until the moment of birth and some radical left-wing ideologies. Okay. But when I was watching this segment from Tucker Carlson this week and indicating that, you know, they applied for a small business loan and they got it. I mean, I think, listen, I understand that you're applying for it. That's fine. But there should be something in someone's head that should be triggered and say, you know what, maybe this is dishonest. Maybe this is not on the up and up. Right. And what's interesting, again, I'll just sort of read you some statistics here as well. As I mentioned, you know, the idea that this is, you know, U.S. Senator Scott wanted to say, quote, you know, another example of the PPP program being misused. Florida's taxpayers should not be fooled into bailing out a huge organization like Planned Parenthood. The money should be returned immediately. And when we're talking about it, you know, with an annual budget of over $1 billion, the explicit SBA administration affiliation rules made it clear that Planned Parenthood was not and is not eligible for the Paycheck Protection Program. Like other large organizations that return monies they were not eligible for. So, again, I applaud them for saying that Planned Parenthood should immediately repay the American people for the money that they took away from deserving small businesses and nonprofits. Folks, here's a newsflash. Planned Parenthood is not a small business. Okay? They preach up and down that they're a nonprofit. Okay? And what bothers me is, number one, that they still continue to bitch and moan about getting federal tax dollars. And I know that in 2018, I mean, this is on their website. It's not like I'm concocting this. Okay. And the reality is that, you know, one of the things that really upsets me about Planned Parenthood is this idea that in someone's warped mind, they think they're an essential small business right now in the country. And they're not. I'm sorry. They're not. I've been trying to reach out to the executive director of Planned Parenthood here in New Jersey to have her on the show because I want to take her to task on this. Because you know what? For an organization that is more of a political activist than anything lately, you know, they love taking taxpayer dollars, and which they then sort of take and apply it to campaigning. Okay? Folks, just think of it for a second. Okay? Because Planned Parenthood, you know, bitches and moans all the time about their how essential they are and everything else. And let me tell you something. This is something that really boils my blood because, you know, they've taken so much of taxpayer dollars. And then again, in return, they've gone on record saying, you know, we're going to invest $30, maybe $40 million in supporting Democratic candidates, which is fine. That's their prerogative, but don't do it using taxpayer dollars. All right. Just imagine for a second, folks, if the NRA, which again is a nonprofit, okay, they're not a small business. They're not trying to masquerade themselves as a small business like Planned Parenthood just tried to do. Okay. The NRA is a nonprofit. They are a completely self-sustaining organization. They survive and function based on donations. They don't take a nickel of taxpayer dollars. Just imagine for a second, folks, if they took a nickel and they decided to say, you know what, we are going to turn around and support Republican candidates. Let me tell you something. Liberals in this country would lose their minds. They would take to the streets. They would be bitching and moaning at every turn. And I'm going to tell you something. That's what makes them disingenuous, and that's why I don't believe them. That's why I don't trust them, and that's why I don't, quite frankly, have respect for them because of that. And, you know, you listening today might think to yourself, well, you know, oh, well, this is apples and oranges for them. No, it's not. It's not apples and oranges because this is an organization that, quite frankly, folks, listen, don't we hear about Planned Parenthood always talking about, oh, you know, women's right. Well, again, if you read Roe versus Wade, I mean, this is based on a 14th Amendment, sort of rationale when it came to deciding Roe versus Wade. Well, folks, it's the same thing with the Second Amendment. You can't pick and choose when you want to defend the Constitution. You don't want to pick and choose when you believe in amendments and when you don't. So, again, you know, kudos to Tucker Carlson. Kudos to Senator Rubio and the other senators for wanting to take Planned Parenthood to task because they're not a small business. and they should return every nickel. And furthermore, if I were the Justice Department, I would prosecute these clowns at Planned Parenthood to the fullest extent, either on both a criminal and a civil level, because they think they're slick. And what's going on, again, with this aspect of money from small business loans. Again, folks, this was blatantly dishonest. And say what you want about Tucker Carlson, and maybe you don't like watching the show, but if it wasn't for people like Tucker Carlson, we would never have learned about the fact that Planned Parenthood was being shady like they were, taking taxpayer dollars from the Small Business Administration, when quite frankly, they're not an essential small business. They're not. I'm sorry. I don't care what you have to say. I don't care what rationale you want to come up with. They're not an essential small business. They're trying to masquerade as one, and that's dishonest. So again, I really hope that Senators Rubio and the others take them to task, and I hope the Justice Department, you know, prosecutes them civilly and criminally, because you know what? You want to take taxpayer dollars and then masquerade and cry poverty. Oh, we can't function. Yes, you do. You function way, way above your means, and you survive very well. So, you know, and I've been trying to get the executive director of Planned Parenthood on the show because I really want to take him to task. It's like you love taking taxpayer dollars and then turn around and use it for campaign or whatever other activism you claim to live under. So I don't know about you guys, but nice job this week by exposing this fraudulent practice by Planned Parenthood. I'm sure it won't be the last time we'll ever hear something fraudulent taking place with Planned Parenthood. And that's my first shot here today on Politically Direct. Well, folks, we got a great guest coming up right now in just a moment here. But again, folks, you know, check out Insider NJ whenever you can at InsiderNJ.com. It's the best coverage of the political scene throughout the state of New Jersey. And certainly, as I've talked about before, it starts with our editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro, and our wonderful and insightful columnists, which include Fred Snowflake, at times Don Steinberg, even though he drives me crazy with some of his columns. And, of course, another exceptional columnist at Insider NJ is my guest today. He is the distinguished Jay Lassiter joining me here today on Politically Direct. What's up, brother?
Hey, buddy. How's it going?
What's going on, man? How you holding up? I hope you and your family are safe and healthy.
We're doing good, and I'm very healthy, and I just want to say, because I heard you talk about Planned Parenthood earlier, I am, as you know, and I don't know, maybe some of your listeners know, I'm a big advocate for marijuana reform because I've been HIV positive for such a long time, and I've been using, you know, those HIV meds, and when I got tested 20-some-odd years ago and tested positive for the first time, it was actually at a Planned Parenthood clinic. And I didn't have insurance, so I want to say thank you to all of those taxpayers who not only paid for my HIV test, which helped me kind of face up to, you know, this big disease that was deadly and kind of put me on the path to being really healthy, but also to the taxpayers who paid for my first couple months of meds, because I was kind of a mess. I was a taker at the time, and I went to Planned Parenthood because I didn't have any money. I didn't have very good insurance, and so they kind of squared me away. So I know that conservatives have a lot to say about Planned Parenthood, but I want you to know I'm a gay man. I'll never need an abortion. I've never had an abortion. I've never driven anybody to get an abortion. So when I think of Planned Parenthood, I think of the people who helped to save my life. So
Listen, Jay, that's a fair point, and I'm glad you're healthy and with us today. But again, the premise of – I mean, I hope you get the premise of what I'm alluding to. I mean, again, just under the guise of the SBA, it just seemed really dishonest. You know, especially during these difficult times because of the pandemic, it just seems like, I don't know, it just seems like other small businesses should probably be more deserving of that money right now than, you know, an organization that I think seems to be pretty self-sustaining for some time. But again, that's a topic for a different day. But I just want to sort of get that out there. But I'm glad you're safe and healthy and with us right now, Jay. And I want to thank you for joining us.
Thanks, man.
No, absolutely.
You're welcome.
And, you know, Jay, one of the things I love about your columns, and I try to retweet them when I can, when I see them on my newsfeed, is I love the way you personalize your columns, and I think that's what makes you one of the better columnists at Insider NJ. I'm sure I'll piss off Fred and Alan by saying that, but I don't really care, because you all bring something different to the table. But you all bring something different to the table. I think that's what makes this team so diverse, I think, in the way that you're all excellent writers in your own way. And I wanted to cover with you during today's episode, and one of the reasons I wanted to have you on today was your most recent column last week. And folks, if you haven't had a chance to read it, I would definitely urge you to go to insiderng.com/NJ-deserves-bridgegate-contrition, because I think it's something, you know, Jay, that as a lifelong New Jerseyan, you know, we all live through this, and we live through the chaos and the insanity of what happened And I'll sort of add my two cents in here, and then I certainly definitely want you to give us a good perspective of what prompted you to write this column. But, I'm someone who's met Chris Christie. He's been a gentleman to me in our encounters. Other than being, fellow Dallas Cowboy fans, there isn't a lot I can really say favorably about Chris Christie. I have a lot of issues with his 8 years as governor. I have a lot of issues with his policies. I have a lot of issues with the fact that, and I don't have any, dog in the race because I'm a registered independent. But for a lot of my friends who are Republicans in New Jersey, he did very little to help Republicans in the party for his 8 years.
You're right.
He only helped, he only helped Chris Christie. And the reason I say this is because in 2011, when I was asked as a favor, not because I wanted to do it, because the last thing in my mind was running for office, but when I was asked as a favor to run for the state assembly up here in Hudson County, number one, I knew it was a dead-end endeavor. And two, I knew it was just going to be an L right from the get-go. But, to my credit, I said, let me try this. I've always said, let me run for office. I've done enough of doing it in student government at Rutgers. And I said, let me try this. And I tried to run a very upstanding campaign. I ran a pretty moderate campaign. I was actually the first Republican in 50 years to be endorsed by now. So that was something that was sort of unique about my campaign. Yeah. So it was interesting. But at the end of the day, Chris Christie did very little, actually did nothing to help myself or other assembly candidates during 2011 and in the election cycles after that. So Chris Christie helped Chris Christie, which is fine. Politicians do that. Right. They can be self-serving. But I think that what Bridgegate really highlights is a reminder that why we as people have so much mistrust in government. And I'll give you the floor in a second, but I was happy to see Bill Baroni and Bridget Kelly walk away after the Supreme Court overturned their convictions. And again, I'm not trying to put them on the pedestal. I'm not saying they're angels, but things happen when you're working government. But I'm happy that they can get some semblance of normalcy back. But it just seems we'll never get contrition from Chris Christie, and that's what's really disappointing and horrifying here.
Well, I agree, and one of the features of our criminal justice system is if your bad judgment has brought you to the defendant table, and you've been accused of a crime, and you do have some kind of contrition, or there is something about this that you're sorry for, you can't exactly go and apologize because that could jeopardize your case. So I get that. I was waiting for – listen, when I found out that those their cases were tossed out, I was happy because – well, maybe not happy, but my first thought was Bill and Bridget have taken enough punishment for Bridgegate and that they've been flogged and they've given enough and they've suffered enough and have enough taken away, and that now that they have been – they're in the clear legally – now is going to be the time for them to issue that apology, not because necessarily do it. Listen, if you can't do it for us because you screwed over the taxpayers and screwed over the people who believed in you and your friends and your family and the people who, who care about you and support you, politically, personally, however, do it for yourself. They should apologize to the people of New Jersey because that is the only way they're going to have their they're going to be able to reclaim their lives. And in my opinion, based on my experience, so without the contrition that we deserve, without them showing us the contrition we deserve, they're never going to be able to get over this. So if they can't apologize for selfish reasons, because that's the apology we deserve, then maybe they should think from a selfish point of view and think about how that hurdle is going to enable them to be on a better trajectory to reclaiming their lives, which I think they deserve.
That's a fair point. And you're absolutely right on that, Jay. And one of the things that stood out for me about your article is, what's great, man, about your articles and your columns. You mixed in the right amount of wit with a good storytelling aspect to your columns. And I think that's what that's what makes you really great. And you're also you also personalize the articles, and you can, your humanity comes out in them as you, for anyone that hasn't checked out the article, read it. You can really tell at the onset. Jay is very transparent in it. And, I think more people should be doing that when they're writing columns. But it was really interesting because I was glad that you decided to, articulate what an apology has to include. And I love the way the bullet points you listed there, an unequivocal expression of embarrassment and or remorse. Acknowledge how you feel if the roles were reversed, explain how you've learned from your transgression, how you won't repeat it, and a plea for forgiveness. And and you just hit the nail on the head right now. It just seems like you're not going to get any of the aforementioned four bullet points that you just listed in your article. And quite frankly, I think, again, it lends itself to strengthening the argument that oftentimes many in government are too arrogant to ever be transparent. And I think that's something that turns off regular New Jerseyans like you and I.
Your Jersey accent really comes through when you say the word arrogant, which I love. And you're right. Like, what is it about being in public office that or public service that close to the top? You know, with such a powerful governor to be that far into the inner sanctum, the sort of hubris and the arrogance. Like, I thought this process would have humbled them all. And apparently it's really not humbled any of them enough to express the humility that they feel because of this, based on their own bad judgment. But, you know, like sometimes I feel like I'm beating up on Bill and Bridget. Like, they're the only two that really, you know, suffered the most from all of this. There were a lot of people involved with Bridgegate who got on with their lives scot-free, who got promotions,
sure,
who went to work in other states for super PACs. You know, when I think about somebody like David Wildstein, because I had a couple of people be like, well, why didn't you include him in your little screen? And, you know, the truth is, no matter what you feel about David Wildstein or his transgressions, or I actually think he brings a lot to the table personally. I think he challenges me as a journalist. But he issued a pretty great apology, and his expression of remorse pretty much covered all of those bases. And when you talked about, you know, the four bullet points of an apology, like, I didn't learn that because I was wise. I learned that when I was in rehab, when I was in drug rehab, 17 years ago. And, you know, I had a lot of attrition to show. I had spent a whole decade being, a drug addict and stealing and lying and abusing relationships and harming people's trust and my credit and my health and everything. And so to have that tool out of rehab was so valuable to me because, you know, as a crackhead seeking redemption, listen, I used to, you know, turn tricks for meth. So you can't tell me that, like, redemption is impossible. But, like, if you want to get, you know, back to a good life, you have to be sorry. You have to show that you're sorry. You have to act like you're sorry. You have to be humble about it. I don't think you can gloss over a transgression like this by blaming the media or, you know, just – it just didn't seem like – what they don't realize is that they're foreclosing on a lot of respect by missing this opportunity just to say sorry. And I wish they would.
That's absolutely correct. And what's interesting, though, Jane, again, I can't applaud you enough for how you've turned your life around. And I really love the fact that you're so transparent about it. I think I'm pretty sure you've helped hundreds of people along the way in terms of dealing with their own addiction and substance abuse. And because we know it's still a serious problem, especially here in New Jersey. And we'll get to that in a moment because I really want to get your thoughts on some items concerning substance abuse. But, you know, when it comes to Bridgegate, you know, we look back 7 years ago. And what was really interesting, though, Jay, is, you know, during that summer going into the fall, I remember that, you know, Governor Christie, his political capital, say what you want, after Sandy, was still pretty high. I know he got some flack from some of his Republican colleagues after that, like that photo op at the airport with the president at the time, President Barack Obama. And I get it. You know, people were like, oh, why would you go? And, you know, well, you know, if the president of the United States coming to your state after it's been ravaged by the worst tropical storm in, let's say, the last half century, you know, you're going to welcome the president. You know, very much as people want to get on Governor Murphy for now trying to play nice with the president, I mean, that's politics. You know, you want to get help from the federal government. You want to get assistance. You know, you have to obviously play the game. And I'm not trying to minimize what it is, but you have to play the game and you have to engage in the civility that's necessary to govern. And we saw that. And subsequently after Sandy, we know that then Governor Christie was, you know, had a really good approval rating. And going into 2013, as he entered a re-election year, I mean, for all intents and purposes, this is a guy who, I remember, he came to Hudson County, okay? He came to Hudson County here, and my mayor and state senator, if you're familiar with him, Brian Stack, was a big Christie supporter. He made a point, that even as a Democrat, and we know Brian Stack is a staunch Democrat, and he's a friend of mine, too.
Definitely.
You know, he brought the governor up here not once but twice during the summer, during the National Night Out Against Crime festivals that we have in August. And then, of course, in the fall. And I remember there was thousands of people at rallies supporting the reelection of Chris Christie. Here's a Democrat,
yep.
you know, a mayor and state senator who is openly campaigning for the reelection of a Republican governor. It wasn't just Brian Stack. It was other members of the state Senate. It was state Senate President Steve Sweeney. It was many, many others that were all very, you know, rah-rah, rah Christie. And listen, I never really liked Barbara Bono, but we all knew Barbara Bono was facing a ridiculously uphill battle to try to unseat Chris Christie. And it really looked like Chris Christie was, and to sort of use a football term that I like to use, it was becoming abundantly clear. Chris Christie was going to win by a few touchdowns. Okay, he wasn't going to win by a few goals. He was going to win by a few touchdowns come November. And it just seemed like, okay, every prominent Democrat from, if you remember, Steve Sweeney to DeVincenzo in Essex County, the executive, to other prominent Democrats statewide were all about Chris Christie for the most part. I mean, there were still some Democrats like Loretta Weinberg, State Senator Sacco up here where I live, were not for him. But the bottom line is Christie was going to walk away in November with a rock.
Definitely.
And it just seemed like, okay, so you don't have a mayor that's willing, and let's be frank, so you have a mayor in Fort Lee that's not willing to kiss your ass, and what do you decide to do, or at least subliminally, what do you try to do is through your people, is make people's commute difficult on a month, on a, you know, during a morning commute in the fall, when people are back to work, people are back from summer vacation, kids are going back to school. It just seemed petty, and it seemed unnecessary, and I don't know why. No one has ever said that to Chris Christie or has ever even said, hey, Governor, do me a favor. Even you have to admit that this is petty. Not necessarily on your part, but it was petty for this to happen.
Well, it was definitely petty, and you were talking about football metaphors, and I think I'm from a Dallas Cowboys family, too, and let me tell you, when I came out as a Philadelphia Eagles fan, my dad was really devastated.
Jay, you're killing me here, Jay. You're killing me.
He's like, if you ever become vegan, I don't want to hear about it. Please promise me you'll stay in that closet. But anyway, so speaking of football metaphors, Christie wanted to run up the score. You know, he wanted to deliver some knockout so that when he went to the people the following year, he could make this compelling case for why he should be, you know, the Republican standard bearer for the White House. And, you know, this is why he went to great lengths, because if you recall, you know, Senator Lautenberg had passed away and Booker took his place, and he was up for, you know, sort of a reelection for a full term. And Christie went out of his way to sort of make a separate election so that he didn't have to share a ballot with Cory Booker, who was a Democrat, who was very popular on the other side of the aisle, because he didn't want to give up even, you know, 1 or 2 percentage points in the final tally. So that entire campaigns by Chris Christie's team and also his government staff, which, you know, is all paid for by taxpayers, by the way, it seemed like their guiding light was to run up the score on that win over a hapless opponent. And you talk about who deserves an apology from this. I think Barbara Bono, I mean, she'll never ask for an apology, but if anybody really deserves one, it was Chris Christie's vanquished foe just before Bridgegate blew up. But anyway, talking about running up the score, when you look at how he was kind of nailing down all of those Democratic endorsements, there were the Republican endorsements, Senator Stack, like your example. And this is a guy, Stack, with rock-hard liberal credentials. I mean, he was voting for gay marriage before it was cool. He's been solid on marijuana, on patients growing their own. So whatever progressive issue is on the table, Stack is actually usually on the liberal side of that.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, when Democrats were pushing for civil unions, Stack was like, look at him, full marriage. When Democrats were pushing for legalized pot, he's like, yeah, we need to legalize pot, but we also need to make sure that people can grow their own in other states. So Stack's endorsement, I mean, look, he's a machine guy. Everybody knows that. He's a dual office holder. That's kind of unsavory, but nobody's ever questioned his, like, progressive, like, credentials. So his defection to the Christie side was just like, that felt different from the other ones, personally. You know, when you look at DeVincenzo and the Norcross cabal and stuff, you know, they were going to be with Christie because, I mean, look at, they were in sort of coalition for the entire time they were in government. But, Christie wanted to run up the score, and that was part of his plan. And every Democratic mayor that they could button down seemed like maybe they could add a few hundred votes to their margin. And
I mean, they really did win by over 20 points. It was an impressive margin.
No, it definitely was. And on a side note real quick, I think you'll get a laugh out of this, Jay. Brian Steck is also a devoted Cowboys fan like myself. So that's another reason we and I get along so well. Brian's also a Cowboys fan. Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's kind of crazy. But you know what, Jay? It's interesting because when we look back on this debacle, because that's what it really is. At the end of the day, we can come up with different scenarios. I mean, at the end of the day, I think this was just a ridiculous debacle. And
definitely
one of the things and one of the things I really admire about the column you wrote, again, when you wrote in 2016, you know, five reasons why you should donate to Bridget Kelly's legal fund right now. That hit home for me because I think it reminded us, like, my God, this is a mom with kids. And like, as you mentioned earlier in the show, both her and Bill have been dragged through, never mind the mud, they've been dragged almost to the core, like the center of the earth. Okay, that's
definitely
how far down they've been dragged. And it just seems to me that, you know, when you read the language of the decision, and it was interesting because, you know, it's very rare you ever see a 9-0 decision by the Supreme Court, right? Like, you'll see one dissenter or, you know, maybe a 5-4, 6-3 vote, but this was like 9-0. And it just, as you're reading, I mean, I don't make it a point to read Supreme Court decisions. I mean, they're like hundreds of pages. But as you're reading some of like the summaries and everything else, it just seems like, you know, you're looking at the language that the justices were utilizing as their rationale. And it just, again, it was a reminder of like, you know, the lower people on the totem pole took the brunt of this. The people like Bill and Bridget. And you mentioned before David Wallstein. I know that I think they've been, listen, your source is better than mine. I'm hearing through whispers in the state that maybe David, because of what happened with the Supreme Court and overturning those convictions, maybe David might want to maybe go. I'm not sure about what he can have overturned because I know he pled guilty. Again, you can sort of shed light on that. But I'm hearing some whispers that David might want to try to sort of do something legal as well to try to overturn what happened with him.
I got no intel on that, but it's definitely a juicy. I'm trying to imagine, you know, how I would feel if I were in his shoes, because on the one hand, he has taken the steps. You know, he's stepped away for a while. He came back gradually, issued an unequivocal apology. But like, I don't know, like, I guess, you know, in some cultures, like if you're a snitch, like that's a deal breaker. You're like one and done. And I think it's really, you know, this is an aspect of his past that, I mean, maybe he wants his right to vote back or something. I just don't know. I don't know about that. But if it were me, I would probably explore every, even if I had been the author of my own misfortune, as these guys all have been, and David has admitted to and apologized for, if that were me, I would do it. But, you know, I don't know. Like, it'll be interesting to, you know, to see.
Well, I'm hearing whispers that because of what happened with the convictions being overturned, that perhaps, you know, in David's case, which again, I mean, I don't want to sort of revisit this again, but the idea that maybe there's some aspect legally that he could revisit in terms of what he pled guilty to and everything else. So again, I just hear whispers, but I mean, you know, your sources are better than mine at some point. I don't know if it'll resurface again, but it's a really black eye, I think, on New Jersey. And you know, and we'll get to sort of the impact it had moving forward. But, you know, Jay, and I say this all the time, because we saw this, I think, in the summer of 2017. There were some numbers that I looked at where, you know, Bridgegate in general created this really bad narrative for, you know, Kim Godano, who was lieutenant governor.
Yeah,
who,
definitely.
You know, who during that summer, you know, was, and this is these are numbers that should stagger, should blow your mind, Jay. I talked about this last week with Jack Cittarelli, who was on the show. And in during 2017, I mean, third party people like myself, independents, accounted for 44,000 plus votes when it came to the gubernatorial election. So Kim Godano got 899,000 plus votes. Phil Murphy got 1.2 million votes. And 3.6 million New Jerseyans did not vote in 2017. I think that, you know, I mean, there's a multitude of reasons why that happened, and we'll get to that in a moment. But we know that Bridgegate, A, shed a tremendous black eye on the Republican brand in New Jersey due to Chris Christie. And I think, B, it just became an insurmountable mountain for Kim Godano to battle after, let's be honest, 8 years of an incumbent. It seems like most likely the opposite party tends to win in an election like what happened in 2017. And I think that, listen, Kim Godano obviously wasn't her fault per se. Obviously, she was Chris Christie's lieutenant governor, but we all knew that it was sort of like a dead woman walking type of campaign.
Kind of, yeah.
No, it was.
I like Kim Godano a lot. And that was unfortunate to see, you know, her. I mean, on the one hand, you deal with the concept, you're judged by your peers. I mean, I guess that's how it works. But I mean, listen, she's nothing like Chris Christie. She's a really, I don't think she's mean-spirited and vengeful like he is. I think she's a lot more moderate, basically kind of like, you know, my mom, to be honest.
Yeah,
she's
enough,
like,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
That whole kind of mom, I mean, first of all, she is a mom. So she kind of gives off, she exudes that. She, I don't know, I give her high marks. And it would have been interesting to see how she did, like, not carrying around, you know, the huge invisible backpack, you know, a steamer trunk full of Christie's bad, dirty laundry. That's one more example of, like, the enduring kind of radioactivity,
legacy.
Like the half-life of Chris Christie.
Yeah, and that's
still
a legacy
giving
that,
off.
Jay, I think that's a legacy that's going to follow Chris forever. I'm sorry. I know he wants to sort of distance himself, and for some reason, Chris feels vindicated somehow. I think you can kind of tell by the vibe he was giving off after the decision
rendered
by the Supreme Court. And I'll be honest with you, it was interesting because I know that Fred Snowflake attended the oral arguments in Washington, and I remember Fred was on the show a couple months ago, and he said to me, you know, he saw Chris Christie sitting there, and I'm thinking to myself, wow, like this size of your you know what, to be sitting there and watching this when, you know, you had a large part to do with it, maybe not directly, but because of who you had, you know, working under you, and then to sort of feel vindicated or sort of come out publicly. I don't know, Jay, if I were Chris, I would have just, when the decision came out, I would have been like, all right, you know, all I would have said is, hey, congrats to Bill and Bridget. I'm really happy for them. And that's it. But Chris just
that's
seems
it.
Like, okay, yeah, exactly. But Chris, do you feel like, oh, well, let me just go on and add my two cents? No, Chris, you shouldn't. Again, and I like him as a person, but in this case, this is where the annoying, obnoxious politician side of Chris Christie comes out, Jay.
It's a huge blind spot. And when I think of his immense gifts, and I think of how if he were, you know, less committed to being so selfish, you know, you would see such remarkable contributions from this guy. And it would have been great for him to take the opportunity to just show a little grace, just to show a little, a molecule. Like, you know, I'm not expecting, our expectations of this guy are low, but this would have been a great example to just say, I'm really happy with the verdict. I knew that it would go along. I knew it would happen this way. And I'm really happy for, you know, the people who work for me who got fucked the hardest. And he could have just left it at that. And everybody
Absolutely.
Would have been like, the whole story would have been like, my God, did you read Chris Christie's gracious response? You know, it was just this refreshing, you know. He doesn't even realize how appealing it would be to people if he took his immense, incalculable political gifts and combined it with a little bit of, I don't know, just
humanity,
kind-heartedness. Humanity. Right.
No, absolutely.
Alas.
And absolutely, Jay. And I think moving forward, it's something that. You know, again, we'll not sure if we'll ever see any sort of real contrition from Chris Christie, but I think that slowly but surely at some point, you know, I'm sure Bill or Bridget, whether it's a book deal or exclusive interviews that they'll give, maybe they'll express it. And we can only hope for that, coming up in the weeks and months ahead. We'll see. As obviously they're trying to regain some sense of normalcy in their lives, even right now, even with the lack of normalcy that we're living under. Jay, let's move away from that for a moment. I want to get your thoughts on this because it's been in the news cycle. I know it's down by your neck of the woods a little bit, and you'll have to excuse me if I'm not pronouncing the town name correctly.
Are we talking about Belmar, New Jersey?
Yeah, I sort of pronounce it like Belmoir instead of Belmar, but okay. Maybe I'm
Belmar.
If I'm mispronouncing,
like the one.
Just like the one over
near Asbury Park.
Exactly, yeah. You know, Jay,
it's pronounced
the
same way.
Yeah, this town, Belmar, in South Jersey, has been in the news cycle for almost a week. We've seen that, obviously, during this pandemic, this gym in South Jersey had decided to reopen all week in defiance of the governor's stay-at-home executive order. As a matter of fact, this morning, I think it's been announced that they've been shut down by not only the state, but also the county health officials and the Department of Health. Mm. Signed an order shutting down the Altilli's gym at Belmar on Monday night, and apparently Camden County spokesman Dan Kishian said that the order was then posted outside the gym by county officials. Obviously, it shut down until the department allows it to reopen, according to the order provided by county officials. Jay, listen, I think you and I might be on the same page with this. I'm sort of torn about what's going on here with this specific issue, and I'll tell you why. Number one, listen, we've been home for 50 plus days. Obviously,
we're at almost like
60, maybe.
Yeah, it's like 70 days.
It feels longer. And I get it. You know, I'm someone who has been working from home, teaching virtually, drinking wine, binge watching shows. Like, okay, like I've been productive at home. Okay, and I get it. People are going stir crazy. And, of course, you know, when I'm on my Instagram, the last thing I need to see is people's daily workout videos at home. I mean, I think that just becomes a little obnoxious. But anyway, the point is that I understand New Jerseyans are concerned about what they view as an infringement on their civil liberties and being able to be outside and being able to, whether it's go back to work, to earn, or just to be able to do certain things like going to the gym with responsible social distancing, with responsible, you know, guidelines. But at the same time, you know, Jay, at least – I'm not sure down by you what county you live in, but up here by me,
I live
in Hudson.
I'm right there.
Counties.
I'm just a couple.
Yeah.
I'm a couple miles away.
Oh, you are? Okay. Up by me, I'm not trying to minimize what's going on in every county. Every county is very serious. I don't want to minimize it. But up here by me in Hudson and Bergen counties, respectively, I mean, it's one of the more densely populated counties in the state, if not the country.
Right.
You know, the number is still high. You know, it's important for people to stay home. But the same token, I think a lot of New Jerseyans are like, hey, you know, this seems a little draconian here. This seems a little tyrannical by the governor and what he's trying to do. I just think it puts a lot of us in like that middle ground where it's like, well, wait a minute. Like, we want to be safe. We also want to make sure we try to flatten this curve and not get more people infected. But by the same token, people want to go back to work. You know, our antiquated unemployment system isn't getting checks out.
It's a mess.
People want to earn. So I don't know, Jay. I'm kind of in the middle here. I don't know how torn you are.
Well, Belmar is not that far away from where I live in Cherry Hill. We're actually different trailer parks, but that's a joke. We're down in South Jersey. It is very different from up north. But Camden County, and we're right outside of Philadelphia here. We're talking about like the Philly burbs. So we're pretty densely packed in, you know, in this sort of outer ring of this Philly burbs. Belmar is not the same as like Salem County, for example, where there's lots of farmland and where it truly is rural and agriculture. So here's my basic take. Let me just start by saying I'm a gym rat. I am desperate. Like I hate not having my ritual, my morning ritual. Like my whole thing is like, I wake up really early in the morning and then I send out some angry tweets and then I get my heart rate scene going and then I can go to the gym for like an hour before I really start to kind of, you know, get impatient or start looking at my watch like it's ready to go. So I'm actually really good at getting to the gym every morning, and it's a big part of my routine, and I miss it, and I'm really looking forward to reclaiming, you know, that part of my life. Especially for me personally, my gym is still closed. I would feel a little sketchy about going unless it was like super early in the morning when nobody else was there, because I do go at those hours anyway, and there's so few people there that it truly was easy, and it would be easy and possible to social distance and just not really have to worry about it, as long as I was cleaning up after myself. And I got to admit, I don't always clean up after myself in the old days.
I think I would probably take a different approach now. Now, these guys in Belmar, they just seem like terrible examples for that sort of civil liberties middle ground, because I don't think they're in the middle. I think they're like really hardcore right-wing white supremacists among them. They're all Trump supporters. I mean, they've got the white supremacy iconography, the New Jersey European Heritage Association.
I did see that in a megaphone that the owner, I think, handled. I did see that. That was kind of tragic and unfortunate to see that, you know, maybe you should have looked at the megaphone. I mean, maybe I'm splitting hairs here, but maybe you should have looked at the megaphone before you grabbed it. I don't know. That's just me, but I mean.
It seems like the whole thing was obviously a stunt. You know, he's done the whole conservative talk show circuit. He set up a GoFundMe page that's raised tens of thousands of dollars, and now he's been closed down, which may have been exactly what somebody who was looking to be martyred was going for. But if I were, I mean, I'm kind of nuanced on this issue. I'm ready to assume small levels of risk. I'm comfortable assuming a certain level of risk to kind of take baby steps back towards normalcy. But the gym and going to ball games, going to nightclubs, that kind of stuff, that feels to me like a different phase, like a further phase, like a couple of steps from now.
I agree.
So maybe like a month we could revisit this. And God, I'm so ready to get back to the gym. And I wish the people that were kind of making this big statement down in Belmar weren't so, like, self-evidently ideologically driven to sort of do a political stunt. And that's cool. Listen, I've done political stunts my whole career. Like, I get it. It's a successful one. But it's not really, like, moving the conversation out of crazy town. And it's not helping us flatten the curve. And, in fact, like, you know, them resorting to, you know, this – to make their point is actually, you know, bring people into enclosed spaces, and they didn't look like they were social distancing and nobody's wearing a mask. Like, these guys are, in my opinion, being foolish and selfish, but I don't want them to get sick.
Oh, I agree with you. No, I'm with you. I don't want to see that either. And to sort of compound the problem too, though, Jay, again, I know that during the week, the governor had made this issue. And what really concerns me about, number one, I mean, it's Memorial Day weekend. It's not the ideal Memorial Day weekend like we're all used to in New Jersey. Like, this is the time of year where we're all excited, like, oh, my God, summer's coming. We want to hit the shore. But now we learned earlier this week across the river that Governor Cuomo has closed all New York beaches. So what's going to happen this weekend is you're going to see a tsunami of New Yorkers coming down to
the shore.
We've seen the governor here lift some restrictions on the beaches. Obviously, there are certain guidelines that still have to be followed. I'm just really concerned, Jay, man. And again, I don't want to sound apocalyptic, but my God, I'm hearing now that New York beaches are closed. I can't imagine what the Jersey Shore is going to look like this weekend. And I think that this is still going to be a problem.
I do, too. Listen, if you look at what's going on down in Florida, and you know, Florida's got a pretty conservative governor who I don't really see eye to eye on and stuff. I think some of the steps that they've taken down there have been a little bit screwy. But guess what? Their beaches are, I guess some of them are open, but they're certainly not open in Miami and in Broward County in Miami and the Keys, densely populated ones. So even they have taken like a really kind of cautious, you know what, now that I've said that Florida isn't open, I'm realizing that they actually have started opening. So I might have put my foot wrong when I was trying to make this point. But to answer your question, yikes. I want to be at the beach. I've got like, I'm in great shape. I got a cute, oh my God. When my bathing suit arrived, my summer 2020 bathing suit arrived about a month ago from J. Crew. I got it on sale because, you know, everything's on sale because they're so desperate to get rid of merch.
Of course.
And I tried it on, and it fit me so well. I was like, God damn it, this fits so good. We're not going back to the beach until 2021, you know, kind of like the Irish curse. So when I saw how perfectly my bathing suit fit, I knew that I might not even be able to see the beach this whole summer. And that was kind of the cruel irony that I felt when I tried my suit on for the first time, because, you know, that's always a crapshoot when you buy something online and nobody wants like a shitty fitting bathing suit, and it fits so perfectly.
Sure.
And I just thought in that moment, you know what, this might not be for 2020. And it sucks because that's a real sacrifice that we're making, and we're giving up something important, and, you know, the industry that us being there and wanting to be there, be in Asbury Park or Cape May or wherever people go. I mean, the Jersey Shore, man, there's a lot of towns. It's a long stretch.
No, absolutely.
There's a lot of communities that are hurting.
Yes.
And we want to be there. They want us to be there. Like, it's not like, you know, it's not like we lost the desire to go to the Jersey Shore. We're that captive audience will be there the minute the fever breaks. We're going to go rushing back.
Listen,
and
absolutely.
Being chipping is.
No, listen, Jay, you're right. And again, you know, we look at Memorial Day weekend where for us here in New Jersey, it's like, wow, like it's the reminder, hey, summer's coming. If we want to enjoy it, we want to go down the shore. And it's just obviously going to have a very different feel this year because of what's going on. And, you know, whether it's what's happened in Belmar or other people have taken to social media, Jay, really taking the governor to task. And one of the things that I think the governor has done himself a disservice is sort of this notion of being dismissive when it comes to, you know, trying to get the unemployment insurance website and database working more efficiently, whether it's trying to get New Jerseyans their unemployment benefits in a more prompt manner. I know a lot of people that are still waiting not just days but months to get their checks. And
I know people. Yeah, I do too, and I think you're right. And because there are so many issues on which Murphy is so sensitive and just really confined the words to sort of console or to explain or whatever, he has that capacity. And I don't know whether, you know, it was when he's at a tired moment or if he's just feeling impatient. Because, I mean, I got to admit, if it were me, I would be losing my patience with all of these knuckleheads and all of these, you know, people that are using this crisis to, you know, just start shit and aren't actually bringing any real solutions to the table, i.e. most of the politicians in New Jersey. So Murphy, the governor, is, you know, he's under a lot of scrutiny, and, you know, he's getting scrutiny like from people that just want to take him down a peg, but also from people like, you know, you and me, who just deserve to live in a state where the unemployment insurance program that people are so desperate to function actually does indeed function, because these are our friends. These are our, you know, these are our fellow Jerseyans. We're all in this together about it. And, you know, Murphy is super rich. You know, most of the people at these press conferences might have a hard time, you know, envisioning, you know, when the governor has his press available every day and he's got the, you know, the FEMA representatives and the health commissioner and all those poobahs up there, I'm not sure that any of them can really relate to what it's like to be, you know, locked down in, you know, maybe a crappy small apartment or maybe a crowded place with people you don't like, or, you know, I don't think they can relate to what it would be like to, you know, not have a big house with a yard and, you know, places to recreate. Like, it's all different. Like, I heard somebody say it's the same storm and we're all in a different boat. And that seems to be more and more apparent as this goes on. It's like, I'm in a good boat. I'm fine. I have a couple. Shit. We almost could get a farmer's rebate on our property taxes. That's how many acres we've got down here. So you can imagine how, in a time like that, you know, this, you know, being situated in a house with a big yard is such a blessing. And, you know, my fellow New Jerseyans don't all have that. You know, not everybody is cooped up somewhere where they're safe, or maybe they're in a situation with a spouse they didn't even like. I mean, imagine that. So
no, absolutely.
It's just people,
absolutely.
Like, if people are getting impatient and desperate and angry, honestly, I'm going to give them all the slack in the world, even if it's coming from the conservative side. Like, I am impatient. It sucks. We're impatient. We're desperate. We're hurting. And so if we're getting antsy, the governor should be self-evident why that is. He needs to be, like, unwaveringly compassionate about our whining right now, because, God damn it, if there's ever been a more appropriate time to be desperate and scared and demanding of better from our leaders, it's now. And he's smart enough to know that. So I hope we just caught him at a bad personal moment when he was being dismissive you know, listen, these people might be whining about it and they might be making a case in an obnoxious way, but they ain't wrong. They're not always wrong.
No,
these detractors
right
are not always wrong.
No, you're right about that. And listen, it's a difficult time for everybody, and certainly the governor, I think the stress is wearing on him. You can tell by how sort of defensive he's being. I think he's a little more snippy than usual. But again, it's based on the times we're living in. New Jerseyans are concerned. I mean, we have the second highest amount of positive cases, I think, in the country next to New York.
Yeah.
I know California is probably third, but I mean, I might be off with the numbers. But the point is that New Jerseyans are concerned. And we're seeing that, you know, the governor, in the eyes of many, isn't doing anywhere near enough. Now, again, I think that goes back to sort of the dysfunction that is New Jersey government. Because, for example, we're seeing that in Trenton, for whatever reason, you know, South Jersey Democrats aren't maybe working at the same pace that the governor is. And I think that that sort of perpetuates the narrative here, Jay, that in New Jersey, just because there's a D next to your name, it doesn't mean that you're the same type of Democrat. I think we both know that Phil Murphy, Steve Sweeney, Brian Stack, Carl DiVincenzo, you know, Ross Baraka, I think they're all very different Democrats.
I'll say.
No.
Definitely.
And that's one
no,
of
you're
the,
absolutely
yeah.
right.
Yeah, and it's something that I think it's something to keep an eye on, because I think as we move on further in 2020, Jane, and I want to get your thoughts on this, because I know coming up in July is, you know, obviously the executive order was extended to June 7th. We know that by then, under normal pretenses, we'd be having a primary in New Jersey. That's not going to be the case. It's been moved to July, right after the 4th of July weekend. And, Jay, listen, this is where I don't want to sound, you know, like a right-wing conspiracy theorist, but up here in New Jersey, up here in North Jersey where I live, in Hoboken or other places, you know, this vote-by-mail suggestion, I think it has disaster written all over it. I think it has fraud written all over it, because we've seen it. I see it right here. Listen, all our audience has to do is just Google Hoboken voter by mail fraud. It was a big case late last year here up here in Hoboken. It was making the headlines. Okay, it was in federal court, so it's not hyperbole. And I never liked the idea that people say, well, you know, the people that engaged in it, well, they had no chance of winning. Oh, it's not a big deal. No, vote by mail is a big deal. And vote by mail fraud is a big deal, Jay. And I think that coming up on the 7th of July, we're going to see problems with this, that because some New Jerseyans, Jay, are just like, well, listen, if we're okay to go to Walmart, Target, Costco, you know, while practicing responsible guidelines, why can't we go vote? I think some New Jerseyans are up in arms about that, too.
I'm not sure I agree that there's – listen, I know there are some specific fraud cases in New Jersey. I think I know who you're talking about. Is his nickname Poopy or something like that? Or
yeah,
Poppy
Frank
or Rhea, Poopy? Or...
Yeah, Frank Rhea.
Yeah.
And his Band of Degenerates, yeah.
Yeah, so that stench made its way all the way down to the country. You'll be glad to know, although I'm a little fuzzy on the details. But I remember that. I think okay, let me organize my thoughts on this one. I'm not as, like, spooked out about, like, I just don't see as much of the fraud that conservatives tend to be, like, scared about. And when I look at, you know, the Democrats who are pushing vote by mail downhill really hard, it's the Norcross Democrats. They have always been able to excel in the vote by mail or the absentee voting, you know, just sort of making that a big priority in their campaigns. And I think it's just a tool for whoever's in power to maintain power, whether it's the Democrats or the Republicans. It makes it less likely. I don't know, like if you're having, because we're talking this is vote by mail only, right? Like that just feels like a little bit of a bridge too far. I think the robust, there should be a vote by mail situation for people who want to do it. But unless we've got some kind of a, like by July 7th, don't you think it should be okay to go to the polls again? I mean, it's not like a lot. This is in a presidential year. It's not like we're having thousands and thousands of people show up to vote.
Well, Jay, you'd be surprised. In a lot of counties, when it comes to, I think, like, I mean, listen, there's a Senate seat up for grabs this year. There's a primary, for all intents and purposes, Cory Booker has a primary challenger. I think there are primary challengers for a lot of the House seats. I know that.
Yeah, you're right about that.
Yeah, down in South Jersey, for example, I had Bridget Harrison on my show earlier this year, in I believe February, and you know she's one of the Democrats trying to run and win in the primary to challenge Jeff Van Drew, for example. So I think from at a local level, and I think in some of those races, July 7th is a big deal. Maybe not up here in North Jersey. I think there are a lot of districts, congressional districts, and even like municipalities that maybe aren't going to be as competitive. But you'd be surprised, though, Jay, statewide, whether it's like a congressional seat or Senate seat, I'm sorry, the Democratic nomination for the Senate seat, or just in general, like local municipal issues. I think you'd be surprised. I think a lot of people are taking the 7th of July seriously.
The Democrats in South Jersey want to turn it into, so if you register to be a vote by mail candidate, you know, if you sign up for vote by mail, they lock you into that forever. And they would prefer to make it a vote by mail only. This is my understanding of how the Democrats from my neck of the woods, you know, their version of how vote by mail would look. Now, not only would I believe that would, you know, not necessarily marginalize anybody's free to vote by mail, but there's just less of a motivation for, you know, independent, non-aligned voters, which is, you know, which is a plurality in New Jersey. As far as I remember, I think it's actually a plurality, even though that may change soon because the Democratic voter registration has been in ascendance. There are a lot of non-aligned voters in New Jersey, third-party voters, and like just unaffiliated. And not only do that whole group of people get left completely out of the redistricting process because that's truly partisan. There's nobody at the table representing non-aligned voters when the maps are redrawn. They're not thinking about non-aligned voters either when they're devising these vote-by-mail schemes. The whatever party is in power that is sort of putting forth these vote-by-mail initiatives is probably doing one that would entrench them. And that seems, you know, logical considering the people that are rolling out the, you know, the voting systems are the ones who are in power to, you know, to make these rules and regulations. So the fraud that I see in vote by mail programs are how like the machines can kind of like get a stranglehold on them. It's not the voters themselves so much as it's like the politicians who are using elections in a way that is ultimately either illegal, like is in the case with that guy that we were just talking about, or just didn't pass the smell test, which is something more subtle and more nuanced, and so nobody's going to jail for it. But if you look at New Jersey's abysmal turnout rates, I've never heard any politician in New Jersey ever brag about how high our turnout rates are.
Yes, that's right.
They're not ready to.
No.
They don't want to. It's
no,
fine the
absolutely.
Way it is. It preserves it just for them.
Absolutely, absolutely. Jay, now I know you live in Camden County, and I know that earlier in the year, South Jersey was in the headlines. Now, I don't know if this specific guy is your representative in the House, but we know that Jeff Van Drew generated a lot of attention by changing teams, as they say, politically. And we know that
yeah.
in South Jersey, right by Wildwood, in late January, it was mayhem. It was chaos, obviously, with people,
yeah.
thousands upon thousands of people converging on Wildwood for the president's visit. Is Jeff Van Drew your congressman? Or is it someone else?
No, I'm in Donald Norcross's district. So I think that's the first
okay.
district. I'm in the third.
Okay. All right. So you were Donald.
But you know,
okay.
They're about to redraw all those boundaries again. So check back in a year. That might change.
Yeah, that's true. What did you think in general, Jay? I mean, I know it wasn't the congressional district you live in, but in South Jersey, you know, as someone who lives there, what was the perception about Jeff Van Drew's defection? Who said, you know, I'm sort of looking at some quotes here from him. It's like, well, I didn't leave the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party left me. He felt that the party was going too far left, which is what prompted his defection. Some people might call it that. But we know that, you know, the president came to campaign for him for whatever reason. Obviously, he was delighted to see a new Republican in the House seat. But what's the perception of Jeff Van Drew down by you in South Jersey in terms of not only his defection, but also, too, like his chances going into later this year?
I think Jeff Van Drew has a pretty good chance of winning in November, to answer your second part first. As far as my surprise, I mean, I was in Trenton covering the State House for, you know, many of the years that he was actually a state senator. And, you know, I've been in the room when he's cast multiple votes against gay marriage and multiple votes against marijuana and multiple votes, you know, for gun, like he votes like a Republican is what I'm trying to say on most issues, the death penalty, guns, gays, guns. I mean, I could go on. I mean, his voting record has always been very conservative within the Democratic caucus. And so now that he's, first of all, his defection was totally cravenly self-serving and opportunistic. And you could see how intoxicated he was by his proximity to power. I mean, he was just kissing Trump's ass. I mean, really, it was embarrassing. I mean, his fealty was just on full display. It was just, my God, get a room. But anyway, if Jeff Andrew was actually doing what he thought was better for his constituents, I mean, like, I guess that's kind of their job, right? Is to do what they think is best for his constituents. I mean, maybe, I don't know if you can quantify whether his defection has actually brought home more bacon or has, you know, done anything good for his actual constituents. But, you know, there will definitely be people who feel betrayed by his defection, and maybe the machine will too, you know, that had supported him and enabled him and propped him up all those years. Now, the reason that I think that he'll probably win in November is because this race, this Democratic race, to figure out who's his opponent is kind of nasty. And, you know, you've got, you know, Bridget Harrison on one hand, you know, she's been tapped by the machine. She's been endorsed by the machine, but she's not like of the machine the way Van Drew and all of the other ones were. She kind of had her own identity for decades in New Jersey politics.
Sure.
If anything, like them endorsing her probably has actually been a handicap. So you got her on one side, and on the other side, you've got Amy Kennedy, who comes from, you know, a blue chip family name, and she jumped in, and she seems to have like charmed the new wave of progressives that got in after Trump became president. And you know, thank God for them, because we need their energy. But also some of the grassroots organizations, you know, some people who are enamored with the Kennedy name, it's going to be a pretty tough race between them. Now, the reason I think Jeff Andrew is going to win is, like, if Amy wins, I think the machine's not going to really, like, work that hard, you know, to ensure the Democratic victory. And if Bridget wins, I don't think the grassroots is going to give a shit. So whichever faction is disappointed in July from the Democratic primary, it's going to be hard to see. It's hard for me to see them like really going gung ho for their second choice for the race in November.
Interesting. That's a good perspective. No, and I'm glad you brought that up, Jay. Jay, you know, here's a topic that I know you and I think will agree on. Well, at least, you might not look at me as like a crazy conservative, which you might sometimes, but here's a topic that is very near and dear to me. And it's about marijuana reform. And
okay.
the reason I'm really committed to it is because a couple of things. Number one, for the record, I've never smoked and I don't care to smoke. But having worked in the criminal justice system for 10 years before entering academia, I saw firsthand working in jails, working at the Hudson County Jail, working at the Essex County Jail. I saw firsthand how draconian and antiquated our drug laws have been about marijuana. Okay. And I say this to my students all the time. About, you know, the idea that white people smoke marijuana comparably at the same rates as black and brown people, but black and brown people disproportionately face much stiffer sentences. And I know that last year, well, going back to the summer of 2017, then candidate Phil Murphy was adamant about, you know, I'm going to legalize marijuana in my first year. That didn't happen
once
he took office. The legislature has dropped the ball. We know in March of 2019, a vote was tabled. Senate President Sweeney said, you know what, we're not going to put it on the ballot until November 2020. Jay, as if we don't have enough to worry about on the ballot in November coming up, I get a feeling from public opinion polling that this is going to pass in New Jersey. But at the end of the day, I think the biggest problem, and as I tell my students all the time, hey, guys, there's a good chance that marijuana will be legalized by the voters come November 3rd. But that doesn't mean that I'm at 12:01 a.m. November 4th. That I want you guys lighting up in the middle of the street. It doesn't work that way.
Definitely.
Okay. The legislature still has to buckle their pants up like adults, sit at the table, and come up with good legislation. Whether it's about, I mean, we know decriminalization is already been enacted, but we need Trenton to pull up their pants like adults and hammer down commonsensical legislation, whether it's about taxation, whether it's about distribution at a state level. I don't know about you, Jay. I mean, I think New Jerseyans will vote for it, but I don't trust Trenton legislators. And let's be honest, I mean, Democrats run the legislature. Okay, Republicans are the minority. They've been a minority for 25 years. That's not going to change anytime soon. I'm really skeptical about Trenton Democrats really getting this done correctly.
Oh, they will. You're guaranteed they will fuck this up. As their track record on this issue has demonstrated repeatedly, New Jersey's medical marijuana program is the worst. I mean, you know, the liberals look at it, you know, it lacks compassion. Conservatives look at it as the overregulated hot mess with, you know, onerous and regulatory climate. I mean, there's just nothing for anybody except for politically connected people who are getting rich selling $500 ounces of shitty weed to sick people. That is the legacy of New Jersey's medical marijuana program. Still, to this day, we mostly have Chris Christie to thank for that because he never wanted it to happen to begin with. But the Democrats were responsible for, you know, so it was his health department and the Democratic legislature that was sort of tasked with getting this program off the ground. And there just seemed like a deep commitment to, you know, incompetence the entire way. And so the result 10 years later is it's still inaccessible. There are still only, you know, 6 or 7 dispensaries around the entire state. And nobody is really interested in fixing, you know, the accessibility issue, the supply side of the equation. You know, nobody wants to deal with home grow. You know, when we get to the recreational part of the marijuana reform bit, you know, the legislature keeps talking about, we want to, you know, expunge the records of low-level pot crimes because everybody agrees that these were stupid and should have never been crimes to begin with. So once we legalize this and we're regulating it, people who, you know, went to jail for stealing a dime bag, we should expunge their record. Everybody agrees on that note. That unites the whole spectrum of people across politics. But that's hard. And the Democrats and the Republicans, they had a go at it. And they took like a cursory glance at what would it take to expunge low-level pot crimes in New Jersey within our court system. And they went running and screaming with their hair on fire in the opposite direction. And they're like, we'll put on the ballot. So the ballot measure, the let's put on the ballot idea, was because the Democrats, number one, didn't really have the votes to legalize it, especially down in the South. The South Jersey Democrats, once again, you know, couldn't muster even 2 or 3 votes to pass the legislation. But also because the statewide political class doesn't want to – they're not up to the task of hard stuff like hammering out what expungement would really look like for a 19-year-old poor kid living in, you know, I don't know, Hudson County or down in Salem County who doesn't have, like, lawyers on speed dial like us. You know, we could get our fresh start. We could get our expungement. We could get our clean slate, or we could pay our fines or whatever it took to get, you know, a do-over. So that if we got busted again, we would be getting busted with a fresh slate, unlike these people who are ensnared in the justice system and can't get a clean do-over every time. So how does it help them? And they don't know. They have no idea. They have no idea how to do that stuff. So once it comes, because they're going to kick it down the road, we'll vote on it. They're still going to have to figure out, you know, how to get it up and going. So their incompetence and on the – you know, for the sake of the Republicans in Trenton, their irrelevance be on full display the next time the ball is back in their court. And that's, it's so disappointing. It's even like, how do you even get involved in marijuana reform anymore in New Jersey? Because people ask me that all the time and I just have to give them a heavy sigh. And
no, Jay, I'm with you. And I think what's disappointing is that come 2021, it'll be a gubernatorial election year. It'll be a legislative election year. And it seems like I'm just afraid that the whole year will be bogged down by legislators in Trenton saying, well, we can't really work on it right now. We have to work on the budget. Legislators will be working on their reelection and the can will just get kicked down the road. In the meanwhile, we keep incarcerating black and brown people wrongfully. And it just perpetuates an awful cycle. So it's really disappointing, Jay. I mean, again, I'm happy that I think that New Jerseyans will vote to legalize it on November 3rd, but I don't have any faith, just like you do, in the legislature in getting this done properly because, again, we keep incarcerating people wrongfully and it has to stop. But Jay, before I let you go, I mean, listen, you're such a gentleman, you know, with me today for as long as you have. I'd love to have you on a lot longer. I think we could talk about 2 or 3 hours about everything in New Jersey and still not get through everything. So, Jay, again, I want to thank you for your time. I want to thank you
for
the great work you do with your columns. I mean, they're so insightful. You really humanize them, and you also make them, I think, as informative as possible. So I want to say thank you for the good work you do, and I want you to please stay safe and healthy during this pandemic. And I hope you enjoy your time here on the podcast because you're always a great guest.
I definitely did. And you know, I really appreciate you saying those nice things. It really does mean a lot. And I promise you that I've been accusing people of being self-absorbed this whole time we've been together. I am self-absorbed enough that I will listen to us later on the stream. And then I'll look forward to sharing it. And hopefully other people will listen to it too. And they will love it. So thank you for having me on.
Oh, listen, the pleasure's all mine. Thank you more. And, you know, when the link is uploaded later today, I know Pete's got a lot on his plate, but when Pete uploads it today later on the website, please share it, tweet it out. And, Jay, you're a great guest. Keep up the good work, brother. And we'll talk again soon here on the show.
Bye. Thank you.
Have a good one, Jay. Thanks. All right, folks. What a great episode today with Jay Lasser, one of our outstanding columnists here on Insider NJ. And I can't say enough, folks, about the great work that he does. And if you don't read his columns on Insider NJ, I don't know what you're waiting for because it's really, really good work. I mean, again, as I mentioned earlier, there's a certain type of humanity that Jay applies to his columns. You know, he really personalizes them. But he's also really, really about making a point. And if you read the latest column concerning Bridgegate and as it pertains to Bridget Kelly and Bill Baroni, I think you'll definitely get a really good perspective of how transparent Jay can be. So, folks, if you missed any part of the podcast, again, you can listen to today's episode and all the previous episodes by going to www.insidernj.com/podcast. And, again, I'll continue bringing you the best coverage of the political scene every week here on Politically Direct. Again, you can always make sure to download it from any PC, Mac, smartphone or tablet. For those of you maybe going down the shore this weekend, again, please practice responsible social distancing. But if you are, you know what? Play this in the car. I think you'll enjoy today's episode and all the previous ones as well here on Blog Talk Radio and also via Insider NJ. Now, if you have a topic or suggestion, folks, for coming up in the weeks and months ahead, write to the show, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Love to get your emails. I do answer them promptly. And I welcome your feedback. What you like about the show, what you don't like, what could be better about it, whatever. Write to me. I'd love to hear from you. Now, don't forget to follow the show on Instagram, ladies and gentlemen, at politicallydirectnj. And also follow me on Instagram at Professor Fernando Uribe. Tons of new likes, brand new followers. I know a lot of you enjoy my Instagram stories. I've been a little MIA lately, folks, due to personal circumstances on social media, but I'll get back on that when, you know, as I'm feeling a little bit better due to recent tragic events. But again, hit me up on Twitter as well, folks, at Professor F. Uribe. Don't forget to like Politically Direct on Facebook. We're getting a lot of new likes each and every day. And, of course, folks, never forget that Insider NJ brings to you the best coverage of the political scene in the state of New Jersey. Nobody does it better, ladies and gentlemen, than Insider NJ. Again, go to www.insidernj.com. Up right-hand corner, folks, you'll see the subscribe button. Click on it, and you'll see the subscribe button right there, and you'll be automatically enrolled free of charge in the morning intelligence briefing, folks. It's the best journalism, the best columns, the best scoops, courtesy of our wonderful staff at Insider NJ. Starts with our editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro, of course, working our way down to our wonderful columnists, which include Jay Lasseter, Fritz Novak, Alan Steinberg, and many more. So again, folks, don't forget to like them on Facebook and also follow it on Twitter. Don't forget to start and end your day with Insider NJ. Folks, again, that's our show for this week. Again, you can listen to the episode in its entirety once again by going to www.insidernj.com/podcast. Not just only today's guests, but all the previous guests in 2020 have been very insightful and informative. I hope you'll definitely want to take a listen. And don't forget, it's real, it's here, it's Politically Direct. Good night, Cherry Hill, New Jersey, all the good people down there in Camden County and Cherry Hill. Thanks for tuning to the podcast, not just today, but each and every week here with Insider NJ. Folks, again, you know, if you're going down the shore this weekend, I know that some restrictions have been lifted by Governor Murphy. Please be careful. Please wear, you know, protective gear. And don't forget, please practice responsible social distancing. Let's flatten this curve. Let's defeat COVID-19. Hopefully with warmer weather, we'll see that. please be careful down the shore, folks. And I'll see you next week here on Blog Talk Radio as I welcome Brandon McCoy. You know, he's the president of the New Jersey Policy Perspective, a nonprofit organization here in the state of New Jersey. We'll have a lot to talk about, not just about politics, but also what's going on in Trenton as well, and policymaking. So you definitely want to tune in next week, folks, here on the podcast for Brandon McCoy, again, the president of New Jersey Policy Perspective. So, folks, I'll see you next week here on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, let's keep on talking.
Bring us back.